This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. Rabia here, and I'm here with Susan Simpson. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Rabia.
How you doing?
I am peachy keen. How are you doing?
Look, I'm in the suburbs, so I'm doing okay, but what are things like in D.C. right now?
Not nearly as bad as the media seems to be depicting. I mean, they're pretty bad, but not for the reasons that seem to be getting all the attention.
Okay. I know there's certain parts of D.C. that we've been seeing kind of inflamed, and there was
but
one
not
particular
even,
picture.
Like, yeah, okay, there's some stuff going on, but like it's relatively minor. It doesn't even mean it's maybe worse than it was during the Women's March like protests, but I don't, not by much. I mean, the amount of damage being done is, it was pretty concentrated. Not to excuse it, but like the idea that it was somehow like consuming D.C. is totally false. Like walking through D.C., it's kind of insane because you pass all these people just hanging out in the street, like in the street and then like the parks and whatnot, like just, you know, lazy Sunday, hanging out in the mall.
And I have seen a couple different social media influencers like taking staged pictures with like boarded up stores and stuff.
Well, it's just people, like, socializing, like, normal. Like, nothing is going on for them. So it's not like the whole city is being, like, locked down or something because of that, because everyone's pretty much doing their own thing, except for the protests, which are pretty, like, during the day are very widespread or have been over the weekend, with lots of people driving and, like, caravans and marching. So there was a very visible presence, but the idea that the city was somehow, I don't know, like, under siege is insane.
Well, there's a lot to talk about when it comes to the protests and why it looked like the city was under siege. Maybe it had something to do with the president dispersing people with tear gas. But let's start where we always do at the top of the show with the latest on coronavirus. And things seem to be slowing down a bit, which is great. We, of course, have topped 100,000. We're at like 105,500 deaths right now, 1.8 million positive cases. I took a look at these trend charts on John Hopkins University. They have a website dedicated to this, and it seems like most of the states are either flattened or they are slightly decreasing the rates of infection. But there are about 17 states that still have a slight upward trend.
Which is not good, but like a slight upward trend is, I'm not going to call it a win, but in terms of like a pandemic that has the potential to grow at exponential rates, you know, that's tolerable, I guess.
Right. Well, I mean, it's kind of like what you said last week, where we are at about 1,000 deaths a day, or maybe slightly less now, maybe 800 deaths a day. Like, it's kind of become like, okay, that's the number we've grown accustomed to. And it's horrific in itself.
Now, but the question is, like, why have we gotten the stasis achieved? And what conditions will it last under? On the one hand, it's possible. It's not confirmed, but it is possible there is seasonality with this virus and that the outside weather and UV light has a strong effect on it. I tend to think it's more that we're getting better at the whole distancing thing and that we're actually effectively using it. From what we know, this virus spreads like wildfire given certain conditions. But otherwise, it's not... I don't want to say that contagious. It's contagious, but it's also containable outside of those scenarios where it's just going to go off like nobody's business, which is basically indoors, close people talking together, singing together in like a confined environment.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think the key has really been like to minimize how many people can be in a closed space together. And that's helped a lot. I don't know why anybody would think this virus is going to do better or worse, like, seasonally. Because, first of all, it's in our bodies, but...
It might. Some flu does.
I mean, but yeah, but from different in different regions... Well, I guess the flu has seasons. Maybe it's a seasonal thing. I don't know.
It is. So, like, the thing with... We don't even know that much yet about how viruses spread and their seasonality effects. We do know that in areas like North America, like temperate, non-equatorial areas, the flu is very strongly seasonal. It will... always default to this whole like like flu season thing in the colder temperatures. However, in places that don't have like the kind of temperature swing or that kind of like seasonality, the flu has a totally different pattern. So it's not that the flu doesn't spread in places that don't have a winter. It just has a different pattern for it. So it could be that COVID, like in places where there's a certain sort of temperature swing, it will be seasonal, but elsewhere I have a more different rhythm to it.
Yeah. Well, it does seem, I mean, certainly and rightfully so, we have been distracted from virus-related news because of, you know, the protests and unrest that's happening around the country. But it's interesting that I see that you noted that Dr. Fauci has said that he hasn't even spoken to Trump in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Trump's over this whole pandemic thing.
He's over it. He's like, I took care of it. I handled it. I fixed it.
Bored now.
This morning, he actually tweeted. He did tweet once in the middle of all his other rants. You know, vaccines and therapies are coming along nicely. We'll be fine. Type of thing. But yeah, Fauci hasn't talked to Trump since May 18th. So that's that. Now, something else that just happened last Friday, which was after we last recorded, was that Trump announced it Friday. He just kind of announced it. I don't know if he tweeted. I can't remember if he tweeted it or if he just said it. I mean, he just declares shit that he is going to, that we're withdrawing from the World Health Organization. We're pulling out of the agency. We're halting its funding. It was at the Rose Garden. That's what happened. He said that WHO had not made the reforms that he wanted. I don't know what reforms those are because, like so many other things, he doesn't actually enumerate anything or articulate any of the policy you know, measures that he thinks need to take place. Anyway, all he said was the world needs answers from China on the virus, but he's somehow blaming WHO as well. Now, for folks who might not be aware, the World Health Organization Constitution is a treaty, and we are a treaty member. Whether or not he can just unilaterally declare us out of it is a little bit murky legally.
Depends on the treaty.
Depends on the treaty. The question is, well, it's not a question. It's just an alarm. It's like in the middle of a global pandemic, why would we withdraw from maybe the most important global health organization?
Oh, and guess what? Ebola's back.
Wait, what?
Yeah, yeah.
What?
I know. There's another Ebola's Ebola back. Outbreak. Yeah, there's an outbreak going on.
Where?
Somewhere in Africa. And again, who is like the main body responding to that and organizing the international response? So by leaving the World Health Organization, we're just seeing the whole territory to China and mm-hmm. hopefully other states who are going to step up now. So there's nothing to be gained for the U.S. by this. It's just totally giving up. We're not going to create a new institution with U.S. domination over it that now has power in this realm. It's not going to happen. So we're basically just giving up on our role as like the international leader.
I wonder, is it possible still for, I'm sure it is. I mean, at least for like, let's say universities and research labs and private institutions in the United States to continue to work with WHO. Or states even. I don't know if states can independently do it if the United States have withdrawn from it.
Universities totally, completely can. That's absolutely allowed. Whether states right. can is an interesting question. It will depend on how they're working with it and what the feds say about it. There's a lot of case law on how feds have total supremacy in this area. And certainly mm-hmm. in terms of like actually having their own quote-unquote treaty with the World Health Organization, they could not do that.
Right. Well, maybe hopefully we just got to kind of suck it up for about 6 months.
Well, the thing is, like, the World Health Organization does have problems. Like, there's legit reasons that sure. we want to reform it.
Every agency does. Every agency does.
Well, more so, but yeah, but, like, but now we've lost the ability to even try to, like, going forward, we're not going to have the ability, even if we got back into it right now, we would not have the same standing to try and influence it we did. So it's, there's no winning here.
I mean, this is part of the global retreat that, like, Putin has wanted. He's wanted to see United States get off the stage as a global leader, whether it's, you know, the UN, climate treaties, this, that, the other. Like, we just should... I mean, this is basically fulfilling, you know, something that he's wanted all along. And Trump has always railed against a lot of these international organizations, thinking that for some reason it undermines the United States' strength, power, independence, all that stuff. Because working with people doesn't work for him. So it's been it's been a stressful couple of years, but it's been an unusually stressful week for all of us in the country, you know, with with the protests and unrest and COVID and everything making it worse is, of course, Trump adding fuel to the fire. So, you know, Susan, we're all feeling a lot of stress.
If you're experiencing anxiety for the first time in your life, you're not alone. But there's ways you can get help for that. And if something's interfering with your health and happiness, like anxiety, or it's preventing you from achieving your goals, well, try BetterHelp. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. And you can start communicating with them in under 24 hours.
Believe me, folks, if there's ever a time you need a therapist, this might be it. And the thing about BetterHelp is it's not a crisis line and it's not self-help. It's actual professional counseling. It's done securely online. They've got a broad range of expertise, you know, therapists that address all kinds of issues and folks that actually might not be locally available in your area.
The service is available worldwide and you can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room or risk COVID. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors as needed.
And it's affordable. It's a lot more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and they also have financial aid available. So visit the website and read their testimonials that are posted daily at betterhelp.com/reviews.
Visit betterhelp.com/45th. That's better. H-E-L-P, and join over 800,000 people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional counselor. Special offer for 45th listeners, get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/45th. They finally released the Kislyak Flynn transcripts from December of 2016 and like early January 2017, the ones that led to him being charged with federal crimes, which until now had not been released. They were declassified and released by Ratcliffe, the new DNI, because God help us all, we're all screwed. And the transcripts are not, I wouldn't say surprising so much, but they're definitely even worse than I would have expected. They're basically in line with what we knew, but they're so much more blatant when you read them. I mean, they show that Michael Flynn totally sold out his country, like Judge Sullivan once commented. And then, and before, I mean, set aside the whole issue of those transcripts themselves, like if you doubt that they're as bad as they are, why did Flynn keep lying about them? Why did he lie to VP Pence and end up having to be fired? He was lying because, like, they were horrific. At the time, remember,
I'm
America...
I have to go read them.
Yeah.
I haven't read it yet.
I mean, it's just him being like, oh my God, he's just so... We're just rolling over like a puppy for Kislyak. And he's like, oh, yes, 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 we agree with you on all these things. Like, these sanctions against Russia are definitely an attack on the incoming administration.
I did read a crazy headline related to the transcripts that Kislyak himself suggested that the Trump administration should accuse Democrats of calling it all a Russian hoax or something. There was some suggestion by Kislyak himself to frame this as a Russian hoax to undermine the idea that it actually was.
I'm not sure that quite was what was happening, but it was definitely... I mean, the context here, of course, is that America had just been subject to an attack by a foreign country who intervened in our electoral process in order to have their chosen person win and also to cause general distrust in the system and undermine American power. And in response to this attack, the then administration under Obama undertook certain acts in retaliation for this act against our sovereignty. And then you have Flynn, who's going to be Trump's NSA, secretly getting on the phone with the ambassador to Russia, from Russia, and saying, oh, don't worry about what Obama's doing. We're obviously not going to do anything to punish y'all for the shit y'all just pulled on us. It's bad. And again, like, of course, they're released because the Trump world wants to be like, oh, look, Flynn's exonerated. And by having released them and knowing that the attention span's not enough people to actually know what was said in those calls.
Why would they, you know, I'm wondering why did they release them?
Because they had to. They had to because it was getting too, they'd released everything else. And the one thing that like, they released all the stuff that was totally innocuous and they were trying to portray somehow like proved a deep state hoax or whatever. But the actual thing of substance that they had not released was this transcript. Now, remember that the whole unmasking thing was supposedly about this transcript. It was not. There was no masking in this transcript in the first place. It could not be unmasked because there was no masking. Mm-hmm. So finally, after like years of requests from people in the Congress, both Democrat and Republican, it was declassified and released. And they're claiming it shows that Flynn's exonerated, but no, it does not.
All right. Now, Judge Sullivan, who is not accepting the charges being dismissed.
He's not. He hasn't decided yet. It's currently pending.
I mean, it's pending because he hasn't accepted it yet.
That's true. Okay, that's yes. That's the way of looking at him. Well, the issue is that right now is that Flynn filed interlocutory appeal saying right. that the D.C. Circuit should overturn Sullivan's decision. But the problem is there has not been a decision. As Sullivan's attorney wrote in the brief for Sullivan, because yes, the judge had to get his own attorney now.
This is not. I had to read that three times. I'm like, wait, what am I reading? Am I reading confusing stuff?
This is, bedrock principle of like appellate law is that appeals happen after a ruling so that the appellate court can review the actual ruling made. There's no point in having an appellate court review decisions that's yet to be made in the first place. But what the Flynn and the DOJ are now arguing is that Sullivan should not even be considering the stuff and that he is wrong for even contemplating a ruling on it because it should be like literally a rubber stamp. Like if mm-hmm. they're saying that if the DOJ wants to dismiss a case, they can do it whenever, whatever, for whatever reason. They don't have to just justify it. They don't have to explain why they're contradicting their past sworn filings. They don't have to act in accordance to normal procedures. They have total authority to do this, and they can force the judge to agree to it. But the rules say that the judge can't do it alone. The judge has to accept it. So the judge has a role here. They're just saying it's ministerial and that he can, has no choice but to go ahead and tick that box.
I mean, the DOJ is acting as Flynn's attorneys at this point. The Federal Appeals Court, what are we looking at there? What does it look like? I mean, I don't know what the makeup there would be to kind of predict.
It's a dream panel for Trump.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. All right. Including Judge Rao, who's, yeah.
Okay. All right. Speaking of Russia, I also wanted to quickly mention that Trump announced over the weekend that he's postponing the G7 summit. He was going to do it in June. He said he's going to do it in September. Also, he has some uninvited guests that he'd like to invite. Four nations that are not actually part of the G7, including South Korea, India, Australia, and most problematically, Russia. Now, if people remember, Russia was voted out after invading Crimea. And right now, so far, there's been responses from Canada and the UK, I believe. I haven't seen from any other nation saying no, that they would veto and they object to Russia being readmitted as a member of the group. So I don't know how that's going to go. Apparently, you know, G7 membership requires unanimous backing of all the members. And anyway, Trump's like, oh, well, we're inviting them. I mean, maybe the rest of G7 won't show up.
We already know that Merkel from Germany has said she's not going to attend. Because of Trump reasons, because of the COVID pandemic going on.
In September too?
Yeah. Like it's not going to be a G7, whatever it is. It's possible. I don't actually haven't seen yet if there's any sort of reporting yet.
It's possible that
the other nations will show up because they want to get in the G7 action maybe. So mm-hmm. possibly there'll be some kind of gathering of some leaders, but there'll be no G7, mm-hmm. which is all part of Trump's backup plan for how to get Russia back in.
All right. Okay. Those were some of the stories that I thought were worth mentioning before we get into the meat and potatoes of what's really been going on in this past week. And God, it's been tough. All right. Now, on May 25th, 2020, not too long ago, George Floyd was killed on camera by a police officer who put his knee on the back of his neck for nearly 9 minutes, including, I think, 2.5 of those minutes after he stopped moving and presumably may have died at that point. Now, since the video footage, I think, came out a little bit later, I don't remember how much longer later, but anyhow, obviously in the last week, we've seen protests in 40 plus cities across the nation, including DC. Those protests have largely been peaceful. There have been some elements of, you know, like looting, rioting, things like that, but not necessarily violence against people I haven't seen, except for violence by police officers who have been confronting protesters. Which I have seen over and over and over again on social media.
I mean, there has been violence in other ways going on sporadically across the nation. It's been,
I've seen property damage,
of police violence. Well, there was the bar owner and Trump supporter who shot a man, and then walked away uncharged. There was also an incident where a man who was wielding a samurai sword, against protesters, and then was attacked and beaten. And then there was a guy who brought a hunting bow or a crossbow to a right. protest and was starting to shoot people, and like the protesters swarmed him and like stopped it.
Well, to be clear, all three of these people are people who are not the Black Lives Matter protesters. They were like counter protesters. Because
I don't know if
we
I'm not gonna go ahead and call them protesters because that doesn't feel like that applies to the dude with the samurai sword or the crossbow.
Agitators, yeah. White nationalists. I mean, we have white militia groups that have, like, their video footage coming out of Philly the other night, which was terrifying, which was, you know, curfew was happening, and all these, in one particular, in Fishtown neighborhood of Philly, these white, just a bunch of white men with weapons and bats and clubs and stuff roaming the streets, along with the police, like, they were there to police the neighborhoods, whereas the Black Lives Matter protesters and black folks themselves were forced to go indoors.
Okay, so there is that going on. It definitely, there are incidents like that occurring. But one troubling theme we've seen across the nation is that the police and the local authorities have come out after these protests and claimed that, like, oh, it's all outside agitators coming in. This is not being done by our locals. This is being people from out of state coming in and causing these problems. And the people who are arresting are all, like, not from this town or this city or state.
It's not bearing out, though.
It's bogus. It's the same thing you hear after every protest, like, throughout history. This whole, like, outside agitator thing is, like, textbook response by authorities to protest. But overwhelmingly, it is not the case. Now, that's not to say that there haven't been concerning moments where this has occurred, and there are people who are acting as a sort of outside agitator role, but that is a very small minority of what we're seeing.
Right. I saw yesterday, or maybe it was this morning, that the feds have made their first arrest of somebody who they tracked on. They saw his post on Facebook saying that he was going to be traveling somewhere and to another city and setting shit on fire, and he actually did it. But he kept posting about what he was doing.
Yeah, if you're going to do anything like remotely borderline legal, and I say borderline because like they're trying to criminalize so much right now. There's protests; it can be a lot of stuff. Just don't do it on social media.
This particular, this particular guy that they charged, he was not going to show solidarity. Black, like, he just wanted to set shit on fire type of thing.
Fire solidarity.
So, yep, he had it coming. All right, but let's talk a little bit about it's like, what's the worst way to respond to this? I mean, of course, it's completely expected from Trump, but you just thought, sometimes you have these little blips, like maybe this will be the time where he just for once gets it right. Or just...
No. No, never. He not just not never had that right. blip. Never think that blip's going to hold out. Never does. Never will. Never can.
He makes it worse and worse and worse and worse.
But here's the thing: these protests are not about Trump,
right? They're not. They're it's not. Like
the Ferguson protests, obviously not about Trump. These are not about Trump. These are about police brutality across the nation.
It's been going on forever.
That is. This is not about Trump. But of course, that's why Trump hates them. Because Trump cannot handle the fact it's not about him, and he is doing everything in his power to make sure it is about him. There was one quote from a Rice University professor that I thought was pretty spot on. He said that, quote, "Is this going to be the summer of COVID-19, or is this going to be the summer of urban unrest?" And Trump does not want it to be the summer of COVID-19. So Trump is all in on this, because one, it's new, it's more exciting. And two, it's not the pandemic, so he can make everyone focus on this, which they are, which they kind of have to right now.
Right.
But in order for Trump to like be totally on board with this, he needs it to be about him. So he is well on his way of making that happen.
But he also, look, I mean, like, this man ran on a pro-police brutality platform. I mean, how many times in the rallies and stuff was he's like, you know, he's encouraging police violence. He's like, he's encouraging people to punch, and he's like, I'll cover your legal costs. Right, don't be too gentle with people you're putting in the police cars. Of course,
police overwhelmingly support Trump. Like, I think at least based on campaign donor data, it's like something like 80-90% of cops support Trump over Biden.
Right. I mean, this fits in very neatly with like the racist roots of so much of his platforms. Whether it's building the wall, whether it's, I mean, like housing stuff or food assistance or education. I mean, it's all kind of like this fits perfectly in it. And MAGA is about going back to that time. MAGA is about going back to the time where people of color dare not raise their heads or their voice. That's what he wants. And right now when it's happening across the country, this is his moment to shine for the racists. This is like, he's like, I'm here for you guys. And
for the authoritarians, the racists and the non-racists alike. Right. He wants a police authoritarian state where the, you know, the father figure leader has total control over all aspects of society.
Right.
And totally dominates them, as he put it.
He has used the word dominate.
Oh my God.
So many times.
Total domination. You must totally dominate every, like, how can you be a Republican and like, I mean, I totally get how you do this. Whatever. Rhetorical question. But how can you be a Republican who is like, spent all of Obama's administration talking about how you were in favor of small government and against like government control, and now you're like, yeah, my president wants total domination of the streets. I am so on board with that. And well, the reason I mean,
two weeks ago he's telling governors to, you know, negotiate with haircut protesters, as I like to call them.
And then 3 months ago he was telling like the president of China to negotiate with Hong Kong protesters.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about that call with the governors.
So there's one study I saw that I wanted to mention because it was kind of heartening, or at least it was a interesting point that I hadn't been aware of. But there is reason to think that in recent years, these sort of protests and sort of awareness efforts have succeeded to some degree. For instance, mm-hmm. a study found that, quote, currently 49% of the white Americans say that the police are more likely to use excessive force against a black culprit, which is nearly double the number, 25%, who said the same in 2016.
Right.
So we're seeing actual like increases in awareness of police abuses.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, when Black Lives Matter first began as a movement, I think so many people in this country did not understand it. I was one of those people. I actually tweeted, I hope it's still not out there, but I did tweet all like that. I didn't, because I didn't understand what was actually being said, which is Black Lives Matter too. And so it's given us an education, it's raised awareness, the kind of solidarity you're seeing. I mean, just really across the country from people who are like not concerned about like the, I really think 5 or 10 years ago, they'd be like concerned about, oh, looting or this, that, and the other. And, but people are just not having it. Corporations are tweeting in support of this. God. And
I mean, okay, it's good, I guess, but like, it's also really disgusting. Corporate endorsements, like from sources that have no business making endorsements for Black Lives Matter. Ugh.
I mean, but what I'm talking about is the fact that it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, it is a good sign. I'm not saying it's a bad sign. It's just kind of nauseating.
I mean, it's complete posturing bullshit. And I personally am also really uncomfortable watching police officers kneel with protesters and hug them
too.
Because they're not putting down their weapons and they're going to like fire tear gas at them like within the next 10, 15 minutes. So, yeah, I think the numbers matter. And I think without social media and without cell phone cameras, we wouldn't be here, which actually raises a question that I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts about, Susan. What I have seen from a number of Black activists and voices on social media in the last couple weeks is people saying, stop sharing the videos of brutality and violence against Black people. Like, stop sharing those videos. It's painful. Now, this is...
The cell phone has done more for like advancing Black Lives Matter and for Black rights in general than like any other police reform measure we've seen. Like, body cams didn't do shit because cops don't care. They get recorded doing stuff. That's the problem. Yeah. Like, okay, now it's recorded sometimes, or they don't because they know nothing will happen to them anyway. So again, well, I do get the idea. Like, I cannot stand seeing that the video of George Floyd. Like, I hate seeing it. I get that. It's really awful to be in your timeline all the time. So maybe there's a case for like moderated posting of those stuff, but I think that as awful as they are, you have to share them. There has to be this kind of public experience of this.
That's grief. What's moved people. That's, I really believe that. I mean, I know that throughout, like after 9/11, with the response that we had overseas, there were international media outlets, like news sources from the Gulf and South Asia, and of course Afghanistan itself and Iraq, that they would show the images of destroyed neighborhoods and dead children and all these things that were our bombs were doing, whereas you never saw them here. And I wanted people to see it because I'm like, you know, if you don't see it, you don't get it. You do not get it. You have to be horrified. This is what's moved people. At the same time, understand seeing it over and over, the trauma that inflicts on a community. It's a tough question. And I've been thinking a lot about it, but I'd love to hear from our listeners, even if you have thoughts on this.
Well, this is one reason why COVID's less in the news now, because most of the horror is happening in places where like HIPAA prevents that kind of footage from getting out. Not saying it's a bad thing, but also it does mean we don't have any visceral images of what's really going on in these hospitals.
Right, Right. All right. So let's talk
Bunker Boy.
Bunker Boy. Okay. Right. That's where it starts in a way. I mean, he got scared real quick, but he, of course, they're saying that this is the Secret Service's decision.
I mean, yes, but also he's the president. So if he really didn't want to go to a bunker, he didn't have to. I mean, I don't even care. Like the real interesting part is someone leaked the news that he was on Friday night during the protest at the White House, or not even at the White House, because they shut down all the streets around like next to the White House. He used to be able to walk through easily all the time. And now Lafayette has been closed off too. So like streets like a block away from the White House, there were protests on Friday night and Trump was put in a bunker by Secret Service. And then someone linked it, which is fascinating.
What did they think was going to happen?
I mean, I don't know.
They turned off all the damn lights. I mean, but people were just standing outside. You still have to get through all the, like, a line of, like, law enforcement and security and then, like, a fence and then a garden and then get into the White House. What did they think was going to happen to Trump?
I don't know. They must have thought that, like, there could, maybe they had a, who knows? Maybe they had some information that made them extra cautious. It's possible. Point being,
do you think this was like just something that Trump wanted to convey that it's so much worse than you think it is?
I can't imagine Trump being the one to leak this part of the news about the bunker. He was tweeting out like brave stuff all brave. I'm doing air quotes again. Brave stuff all night, like how the pro, like these like kind of like horrific like. Daydreams where he was imagining protesters being like bitten by vicious dogs and like hurt by ominous weapons, hurt at best, implying maybe they'll be killed. And then at one point he tweeted like, "I hear tomorrow night is MAGA night at the White House."
He's just making it up.
Yeah, yeah. And that was Saturday night, and I was there. I can tell you, there was no MAGA night at the White House.
Were you hanging out in front in Lafayette?
No, you can't get in Lafayette, but the H Street around there. My goal in going there was, like, I wanted to be there to show up because, again, well, one, I'm in D.C., so my vote means shit. So this is, like, the only way I can vote. And two, like, this is a cause worth supporting. But I was trying to be, like, COVID safe. That was my plan.
Right.
And I've been really good, I think, or whatever good means. But I've been very cautious this whole time. I feel like I've had basically zero exposure. So I feel confident, at the very least, I was not risking giving it to anyone else. I felt good about that part. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, like, the protests were, I wouldn't say safe, but they were not that bad. There was distancing of a sort for a protest. There were mostly people in masks. I stayed out of the main crowds and kept moving. So in an outdoor area, like, that honestly shouldn't be that high of a risk. Yeah, it's not zero risk. It's a risk, but it's a manageable one, and it's not a high one. So I felt pretty good most of the night. And then, well, not most of the night, because even before the sunset, the Secret Service and the cops, like, just let loose with the tear gas.
Was that on Saturday night?
Yeah, it was everywhere Saturday. And the, like, if I get COVID, I know the exact moment I got it. I swear.
Oh, no, God.
Because, like, when the tear gas came out, like, all, like, hell breaks loose. Like, you're trying to tell people, like, not to run, to walk. And then at one point, we got... And I was pretty far. I was not trying to be in the action. I was there at a safe-ish distance. And we still got blasted, like, full-on with tear gas. And people were, like, I had a little alcove I was kind of hanging out on where I could kind of stay separate from everyone. And everyone just, like, falling in and, like, ripping masks off and coughing and sneezing and just coughing everywhere and, like, snot flying. People, like, and you're helping them with water. Like, I just gave up. I had some water, some, like, pouring in eyes, like... It was definitely not safe. Like, at that point, I'm like, yeah, this is full-on COVID exposure. Like, if anyone here has it,
so decent chance I'll live too. What did the tear gas come in response to?
Nothing.
Had protesters moved beyond a certain line? Were they breaking curfew? What was happening?
I could not see for sure. I could see, like, down... I could see the main group. So, like, there's nothing visible. When the tear gas just seemed kind of random. Like, it was all the time. It was, like, everywhere, and it seemed extremely... non-correlated with anything's going on. There were some protesters that were taking away the, like, the little fencing thing. I saw some actually carrying it off under their arms like a souvenir. And there was one guy pretty near me, actually, who is just one dude. He, like, was, like, laughing his head off because he found this dumpster in an alley, and he just starts pushing it over towards, like, the park and then sets it on fire and, like, runs away.
Oh my God.
And it's not great, but also it was really it was funny. Like, I'm not gonna lie, I was laughing my ass off because the way he did it was pretty comical. Like, it was an aggressive act and a violent act for sure, but it's also was not. I mean, there was no intent of actually like causing harm to anyone aside from that poor little dumpster that didn't deserve it. But
well, look, a dumpster fire is probably
it was
the
it
best
was art. He was drawing an analogy. It was clearly a form of protected speech. So that did happen, and there was one dude who fired a flare off into the park. And then there was a Secret Service agent that tried to stomp it out, which is really funny because you can't step out of flare. So there was action going on, but nothing that was more than you'd get at any DC protest, really. I mean, there's not a DC protest where there's not someone lighting a trash can on fire. And usually there's no kind of like police response like that at all. And the tear gas fucking hurts, I will say. I can now say from personal experience. We all need a distraction sometimes from what's going on right now. Like, everyone is paying attention. Everyone's watching the news. Once in a while, you gotta do something else.
You gotta check out. You gotta check out. And for me, I check out with Best Fiends. Best Fiends is a casual game that anybody can play. It's made for adults, but yeah, anybody can play it, and you can spend as much or as little time as you'd like in the game.
Yeah, this is not like a game you gotta spend all your time on grinding at for whatever. If you got 5 minutes here and there, you just wanna check out, like, whenever you're commuting or not commuting these days, you pull it out, play as much as you want, and put it away when you're done.
Best Fiends is, it's actually pretty cute because all their characters are, well, almost all of them are bugs, and the antagonists are these slugs. It's really colorful. There's puzzles, and you know, you don't have to be online to play it, which is also one of the best things. It's like you can just be offline and continue to play.
Yeah, so if you're at a protest and you're in airplane mode, you know, to avoid the Fed spying on you, you still pull your game out and play. Yep. In between protests.
And Best Fiends updates the game every single month with new levels and events, so it never gets old. They treat the game like a service for the players.
It's a unique and exciting puzzle experience unlike any other puzzle game out there. So engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of cute characters. Trust me, with over 100 million downloads, this 5-star rated mobile puzzle game is a must play. Download Best Fiends for free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends.
When we're talking about protests, what we're talking mostly about is just people marching. People marching or gathering and standing, kneeling, holding hands, you know, chanting. I mean, that's it. And those are constitutionally protected activities. However,
I can say for sure it is the police violence started first. There was definitely looting going on in D.C. Not the same amount as in New York. There was some property damage. A lot of like random window smashes, even more than looting. And a lot of graffiti. But, like, that stuff was after the police had gotten just increasingly violent all night. And after, like, just waves and waves and waves of tear gas. Even when, like, families with kids were still there. Like, in daylight, they were still tear gassing.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've seen video after video where there are just protesters standing around, even kneeling, doing absolutely nothing. And suddenly they've been attacked by the police, either with shots fired. We've seen numerous people get hit with rubber bullets. Numerous people have lost eyes at this point, gotten stitches. One journalist, you know, she was blinded, I think, on Saturday night by a rubber bullet. So, yeah, there's the violence is coming mostly primarily from the police. Now, speaking of the violence, though, and we mentioned earlier this idea that authorities are saying that there's disruption happening from outside agitators. Trump and Republicans have basically said this is all Antifa. Now, this is pretty, this has a potential to get kind of scary, and that is that they announced over the weekend that they're going to be designating Antifa a terrorist organization.
A domestic terrorist, yeah. On the one hand, no, they can't do that. On the other hand, it doesn't matter because they're doing it.
Well, they can't and they can. I mean, because
it has no legal meaning, but
that's the problem.
But it doesn't need to have a legal meaning. That's not the point why they're doing it.
Right. But so part of the, and I mean, when I worked in national security policy for 6 years, it was around the issues of domestic terrorism. And one of the complications is that it's so amorphous that it can be really abused and exploited up to whatever political ends you want. You know, when we think about the only real laws defining terrorism are all related to international terrorism. However, that tie can be quite tenuous. So you can easily make the argument that Antifa has international ties. I mean, anybody here, if I'm somebody, some private citizen who supports these protests, and I am part of a Facebook group that connects me to Antifa people, or just following their events, like let's say in Germany or somewhere in Europe where Antifa began and is still active as a movement, but it's not really an organization, yeah. That is enough. Those kinds of tenuous ties have put Muslims under terrorism laws away for life. I mean, like, that's exactly how it's been used. When you hear all these years of ISIS-inspired terrorism, it just means somebody watched a fucking video and got inspired, and that they use that because that is how they use the international connection to charge an American citizen. So,
and keep in mind, like you said, there is no organization here in the first place. Like Antifa is not an organization.
There isn't,
in a meaningful sense.
You don't have to have one. Is the problem under these laws?
It's a playbook.
Under the lack of them, yeah, it's a playbook, right? So a lot of damage can be done. I mean, Matt Gaetz, you know, who, God, that man. He tweeted the other day after this announcement, he said, oh, great, can we now hunt Antifa down like we do terrorists in the Middle East and kill them, basically. And others have mentioned Guantanamo. I mean, like...
And Tom Cotton, like, going off on, like, some, you know,
the Insurrection Act.
About, like, yeah, destroying his enemies, showing them no quarter to the protesters.
Right. And the cry of no quarter basically means you kill them. You don't take, like, prisoners of war. Like, you kill people. You don't give them any protection. The Insurrection Act has been invoked. The president mentioned it.
It's not been invoked. It's been invoked rhetorically. It's not
invoked, like, unofficially. Like, it's just been said.
Like, he's not actually using it. He's just, like, threatening to use it.
Although somebody, one analysis I read yesterday was, okay, and let's talk about this. Let's talk about the church. Was that that's what Trump used, was the Insurrection Act to clear out the square so he could walk to the church and get the photo op yesterday.
This is why he's not using the app, because he doesn't want to be constrained by things like laws. If he invokes that law, he'll have pressure to like actually follow the constraints of that law. This way, he's not stuck with following this instruction law because he's not even using it officially. He's just doing something else. So like, what powers really constrain him here? Maybe he's using that power. Maybe he's using that power. Who knows? That's the whole point of why he won't officially invoke it, because that would, to him, actually limit his powers and not expand them.
So St. John's Church is this adorable little church across the way from the White House. And apparently, I think on Sunday night or Saturday night, I don't know, like some part of the basement caught on fire. I don't know if I haven't seen
anything. Someone lit it on fire. Yeah.
Okay. So yesterday what Trump did was, well, it was yesterday, right, when he did
it? It was yesterday. So first of all, the mayor of D.C., Mayor Bowser, who is a terrible mayor for the record, she has at first saying correctly that she's not going to institute a curfew because that's not going to help de-escalate things. Like a curfew is just going to escalate matters, and we'll see it in the next few days. It'll be escalating stuff because it's not going to help. She now put a 7 p.m. curfew. Keep in mind, like, dark here is not until 8:30. So sun's still out. There's now a curfew at 7 o'clock as of yesterday and then today, Tuesday. I don't think it's been extended yet past this. So with this new, like, curfew in effect, it's now unlawful to be assembled for peaceful protests after 7. But Trump, of course, immediately schedules a Rose Garden address for like 6:30 p.m. Obviously intended to make it appear. Oh yeah, this was after, though, a day of him having total domination talk constantly.
All right, he had the phone call with governors. Before that, he talked to Putin. I think Putin riled him up, so he got on a call with all these governors, and they described it as deranged. He said he's going to ban the flag being burned and want to bring the military in. And then he said, quote, when someone's throwing a rock, it's like shooting a gun. What's the difference? You have to do retribution, in my opinion. And the full audio has been released. But let's listen to just a little portion of this.
What happened in the state of Minnesota, they were electric stuff all over the world. They took over the police department. The police were running down the street, sirens blazing, the rest of them running. It was on camera. And then they wiped out, you probably have to build a new one, but I've never seen anything like it, and the whole world was laughing. Three days later, I spoke to the governor. The governor is, I think, on the call, and he's an excellent guy. And all of a sudden, and I said, you got to use the National Guard to take numbers. They did it first, and they did. And I'll tell you, that I don't know what it was. It was, Governor, it was the third night. Fortnite. Those guys walked through that stuff like it was butter. They walked right through, and you haven't had any problems since. I mean, they don't. They're not going to go there. Now they'll go to some other place. But once you called out and you dominated, you took the worst place, and you made it. They didn't even cover it last night because there was so little action. Because you dominated. You dominated. Now, what happened to New York, I have to tell you, I live in Manhattan. What's going on in Manhattan? I have no idea. New York's finest. They got to be allowed maybe to do their job. I don't know what's happening in Manhattan, but it's terrible. And because it's New York, because it's Manhattan, it gets a lot of press. So they really spend a lot of time on it. But New York has got to have to toughen up. And we'll send you National Guard if you want. You have the largest police force in the country, 40,000 people, I understand. But what's going on in New York is terrible. It's terrible.
Now, when Kaylee was asked about this call, she had a briefing, I think, later that day. She said, yes, it took place, but I don't know what happened in it. We never know what happens in these calls. But it was the first call he made when he emerged out of that bunker.
You know, I want to see like a chart of the known calls. So Trump no longer publishes all of the presidential calls with foreign leaders like he used to. I would love to see, though, of the ones we do know about, like how many more times he's spoken to Russia than to like any other country. I mean, maybe there's more with some other country, but I don't think so. It seems like he's got most one-to-one contacts with Putin.
Yeah. And why? Why would he contact Putin in right after coming out of a bunker in the middle of these like, what does Putin have to do with any of this, right?
He needs some moral support. He needs to talk to a friend after his hard night in the bunker.
I think Putin needs to talk to him. I think Putin was like, this is an opportunity. Like, he's framing this as an opportunity. This is the opportunity.
The world is laughing at you. Go totally down. No, who knows?
Right, like, maybe go full authoritarian.
Like, I mean, they could have just discussed the weather. But, I mean, I think Trump on his own has this instinct. He definitely has this instinct for authoritarianism. Like, he definitely has this instinct to, like, dominate.
He does.
But I can totally see
Putin, like, egging him on and saying, the world thinks you're weak. You look weak. You've got people in the streets. You can't control your people. You look weak.
Possibly, but until we know that, I mean, they're never going to leak it. But point being, we don't need to blame outside agitators here like Putin, because Trump on his own is enough.
He's enough. No, the blame is on Trump for reaching out to him versus reaching out to, I don't know, maybe black leaders. But Putin, by the way, also announced there's some election coming up in July where it's going to be on the ballot whether or not he can be president until 2036.
I expect a landslide victory for him in a totally fair election.
Totally fair election.
Anyway, yesterday at about 6:35 p.m., so, you know, almost a half hour before the curfew goes into effect, the police, and it looks like Park Service police at this point, although there's like over half a dozen different police agencies there at the time, plus military reinforcements, just because, they begin gassing a totally peaceful protest, tear gassing them, rubber bullets, just full on in mass, like forcing them out with shields and batons. They attacked an Australian reporting team there for like Australia's most popular everyone watches in the morning show.
And they are calling for an investigation into that.
Yeah, so my husband's Australian. And like around like that time, like just before 7 yesterday, he got all these calls from like family and like email check-ins like, are you guys okay? Is everything all right over there? And I was like, wow, they're taking it really seriously. And only later did I find out that like this because like the morning show had been showing live on TV as their camera guy and reporter were just like batoned for no reason by the police.
Yeah, I mean, I've had some folks from Pakistan saying, I mean, this is pretty much what it looks like right before the coup.
Anyway, they cleared out H Street for the peaceful protest, and then they had the most surreal thing so far in Trump's presidency. He with his 95% like white male entourage walks across Lafayette Park, walks across the street.
Did you see the video they made?
The part for me that's most disturbing is to see that and to know that Trump and his supporters and those in the White House, when they're watching this video, they actually see a projection of strength. Like their interpretation of this is subjectively, they are seeing a sign of power and strength from this, which shows a degree of, like, well, one, pure insanity, and two, like, an embrace of authoritarianism that's you have to have in order to think that is a video that makes you look powerful. Because again, Trump has like 6 to 12 random law enforcement agencies there. Right. Arlington's police were there, and Arlington City.
He's completely board surrounded by back. Security. Yeah. This man just came out of
the
bunker.
Then he has the police or the military called in for this. So he's walking across the street with like just across the street in D.C. after tear gassing peaceful protesters, and that to them is power. And of course, you've got to make it worse, make it even more horrifying. It wasn't just Trump. It wasn't just his, like, you know, White House officials, plus Ivanka, the only one in a mask and carrying her little, like, Birkin purse.
Well, that's what she had the Bible.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, why is she carrying a purse? Like, that, like, I mean, one, why are you wearing those kind of heels to, you know, for this event? And two, like, why are you so concerned with your image?
Ivanka doesn't ever wear heels.
You're the only one to wear a mask. Like, yeah. She obviously has some concern for her image still, that she's not just playing the MAGA face. No. That's not that. She has a concern for her image that expands beyond MAGA world. Most MAGA doesn't care about that. She does. But that's all. That's horrible enough. Here's where it gets like really fucking horrifying. He also had with him Attorney General Barr, Secretary of Defense Esper, the General Milley, who is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
And his combat fatigues, by the way.
And his combat, with his battle uniform. Yeah. And the National Security Advisor, what's his face, because no one cares. They're all there with him on this horrific walk. This was obviously intentional. Like, the symbolism was intentional, not ahead, and this is a display of Trump's complete control over these branches of the government beyond the Constitution. Like, they will support him in gassing and rubber bullet shooting peaceful protesters for a fucking photo op. That's how far his control has gone now.
It just, I mean, if he's willing to do this for this photo op, he'll do anything for the election. I mean, like, it's I feel like he's kind of testing the waters. He's just seeing how far. And I think he's proven that he can basically just shut the whole country down in response to however the election might be going. He can have law enforcement and military and all of them.
If you're telling yourself that the Trump can't go too far because, like, the military would still wouldn't go along with it, don't tell yourself that. You have no reason to be confident of that.
Right.
The one sign of, like, discomfort that came from, you know, the defense side of things is that they had a statement this morning that was so sad. I'm like, wow, this is the most pathetic thing you could possibly have done.
Who gave a statement?
It was spoken for Department of Defense, or an unnamed senior official, who said, quote, they, meaning Esper and General Milley, were not aware that the park police and law enforcement had made a decision to clear the square. And once they had begun to walk off the White House grounds, thinking they were heading somewhere else with the president, they continued with him. In other words, like,
that can't be right. They can't, like, just be following him randomly around without any idea where they're going.
The whole story is that they thought they were going somewhere else. Like, they didn't know this whole plot to get the photo op. And they're trying to say now, because they're fucking either, I don't care if they're lying or not, like, that's just the saddest thing, that, like, oh my God, we got so played by the White House. We didn't mean to be part of this fascist photo op. It just kind of happened. And then, like, once we were walking with him to the church, we were like,
why were you dressed in your combat gear? I'm like, are you kidding me?
Like, this is bullshit. I don't believe them necessarily, but either way, it's so pathetic. Like, oh my God. Like, you're, like, now feeling the need to distance yourself from it by saying, like, oh, we're so stupid. We just fell for this, and then we couldn't do anything about it because we were already walking.
Yeah, I guess at a minimum, it shows that they have some awareness that it wasn't a great look. On top of which, the man gets to this church, a church that, by the way, he, like, basically never goes to, a church that was not informed. They were not asked permission.
Oh, they gassed the priest again off the church grounds.
They gassed they gassed one of the pastors or something. And it's an Episcopalian church. They stand for everything against Trump. They get rid of her. And then he does the most, it's like he has never held a book in his life.
it's truly comical. Like, it is. If it wasn't real life, you would think it was, like, a very studied actor who has, like, put so much thought and work and preparation into this role, because he just fucking nails it. Oh my God, I love it. He's just standing there by the church, and, like, he's trying to hold a Bible.
He doesn't know, does he not know how to hold a Bible, he doesn't know how to hold a book. I mean, like, he's...
Or anything. Flips it around. Trying to hold something like that. It's, like, awkward as shit. It's like a little alien claw, like, little pinchers, like...
I'm just, like, I guess that would kind of be awkward for anybody. What was the thought that I'm going to hold the Bible and do what with it? I'm going to hold it in front of me? I don't understand what was anyhow, he eventually just held it over his head, and some people said he had it upside down, but whatever. A reporter asked on video, is that your Bible? And he goes, it's a Bible.
It's a Bible.
Oh, I wanted to die.
But then they asked him, like, what are you thinking right now? Or something like, what are your thoughts right now? What is your intention right now? And he was like, don't ask that. So again,
he has none.
It is funny, but it's horrific. And I think it's possible. Well, so apparently Hope Hicks was responsible for this whole like scheme. So if it was her, I'd kind of think maybe she had more of a plan. But on the other hand, it's entirely possible. Their whole plot was like, let's gas the protesters so Trump can walk triumphantly to raise a Bible over his head. And then they're like, they just never really thought about what happens next. Like, what then?
Well, I guess there doesn't have to be a what next. It's basically, look at me, white guy, got rid of the people of color, got rid of the people complaining about violence against people of color, and here I am, white Christian, holding a Bible in front of a church.
And why is he holding a Bible? For the record, like, why didn't that one fucking reporter ask him, like, why are you waving a Bible around? Like, what the fuck's the point of that? Like, what are you trying to say here? Are you trying...
You know what he would say, Susan? He would say, you know why.
Yeah,
you know,
he would say that.
You know why.
He would. But, like, there's no, like, that's an insane image, because, like, there is no coherent explanation for it beyond, like, just demagoguery. It's like, oh, look, the president's going to wave a Bible around to show his vanquish over demonic forces, I guess.
I think some of my favorite GOP responses to this whole thing is like, oh, wait, what? Did he go to the church? I didn't see nothing. I didn't see any of that.
Oh, my God. So
they're pretending like it didn't happen.
Let's do a recap of how Republicans in Congress and the Senate have responded to this display of fascism, which is what it is. Like, I'm not trying to be dramatic here. I'm not trying to be like over the top. Like, that was just a purely fascist ploy. It was a photo op. It was an abuse of power. It was a sign of like failure of civ mill relations, and the, you know, portent forth to come. And like y'all, if you think the worst can't happen in America, like, look at that. Yes, it can. We're not there yet. We're not the worst. We got several more stages to go before we're there. But if you have any doubts that we could go there and that the powers of fascism could win here, don't, because they totally could. Anyway, here's what the brave Republicans had to say in the Senate. So Rubio kicked off this response by tweeting out, quote, many in the media fell for the calculated and deliberate tactics of professional agitators. They knew the street needed to be cleared before 7 p.m. curfew, but they deliberately stayed to trigger police action. And to get the story they want, the police attacked peaceful protesters. No, literally, the police did attack peaceful protesters, and it was 25 minutes before there was a curfew. And that, to Rubio, is professional agitators instigating police violence by lawfully assembling in compliance, full compliance with all laws. And
just standing there.
Existing. The fact that they are protesting, he's saying, like, was a challenge, and that it left Trump no action but to use violence against them. So that's probably the worst response. But then we have Grassley, who said, quote, I don't know whether they were all peaceful or not. Looked like they were peaceful, but only the policeman there would know if there's some potential violence in there. And the president's got to be protected. So there's no such thing as a peaceful protester now. To Grassley, everyone can look peaceful. It can seem like a peaceful group, but you can't know that everyone there is peaceful. Therefore, you can treat any peaceful gathering as a violent one.
Yeah.
And then you've got, like, Senators Johnson and Loeffler, who were like, what? There was a photo op? No, wow. Never heard about it over here. Dang.
That's what I liked.
Well, I guess I was watching, like, Lifetime last night. Totally missed it. And you have, let's see, Romney, who, not surprisingly, but a little disappointingly, took the same route. Quote, I didn't watch it closely enough to know what really happened.
I don't know. I feel like this is the kind of thing you fucking want to watch closely.
Yeah. And then there's Paul, Rand Paul, who said, quote, I guess I was mostly horrified by the violence I've seen in our cities. I mean, did you see the woman hit by the 2x4? So yeah, he's full on team police violence. We have Murkowski, who, this is not a AI bot generated response, it's a real response, but an AI would have done just as well. said, quote, what we saw last night was not the America that I know. Really, Senator? What part specifically is not the part that we know? I just want to clarify. Senator Enzi, my favorite one, his response was, I'm late for lunch.
You're lying. He did not say that.
He did. He did.
He really did. He was okay.
And then Ted Cruz, the Zodiac Killer, when he was asked if this was an abuse of power at the White House last night, he said, quote, by the protesters, yes. Keep in mind, it was a peaceful protest. There was no violence from the protesters. It was a peaceful protest.
Yeah. Like, it was an assembly.
It was like a DC peaceful protest. There was nothing going on that would remotely justify any kind of violence. Not even.
And you know, I have been part of like massive marches, like, you know, massive, massive anti-war marches, like especially after 9/11. Never experienced a response like this from the police with like tens and tens of thousands of people in the streets. Never experienced anything like this. But what I think what's shocking is all of these people just letting it happen. Like, mm-hmm. Nobody in the GOP is saying this is not acceptable. Is there a single person?
There's one. Senator Tim Scott, the most prominent, probably highest ranking black Republican government official.
Well, there you go.
And he, at first, kind of, I mean, he didn't name the problem, but he did say, quote, obviously, if your question is, should you use tear gas to clear a pass so the president can go have a photo op? The answer is no. That was the only criticism like that came out. And again, he's not like, oh, Trump shouldn't do that. But like, he's like, hypothetically speaking, if someone did this, would I agree? No. Then today, he was asked again, and when he was asked the question once more, he wouldn't stop, and he just said he's already said too much and kept going. And then we have Senator Sass, who, like, I'm only going to mention because he's on the list, but, like, literally could not care any less. I mean, it's Sass, like, whatever. He said, quote, there's no right to riot, but there's a constitutional right to protest, and I'm against clearing out a peaceful protest for a photo op that treats the world of God's political prop. Whatever. That kind of counts as, like, the...
Only... I mean, that's the harshest. Those are the harshest words.
But also, it's Sass, so it's meaningless. Because, like, he right. says that as someone, like, orders, like, strawberry froyo instead of chocolate. Like, that's his constant level. It's like Susan Collins being concerned. It's all he does.
Right.
So, that's a sign that literally if Trump wanted to go full on fascist, he just said, like, actually, you know what? I'm not pretending anymore. I'm just going to be a fascist right now. That's the responses you could expect. About the same.
You know, all these people have passed his test. He's like, I can do this. I can do this and I can keep pushing it further and further. He threatened the governors on the call, and he said it also, I think, yesterday in the Rose Garden. He said, I have the power to call on the military. If the governor's not going to take care of this, I'm going to send the U.S. military into these streets. And he doesn't want to see anybody in the streets protesting anything.
Well, no, he wants to see people protesting if they're wearing MAGA hats. He likes that.
Right. But, you know, I mean, Black Lives Matter.
I will say again, like, the only limit on Trump's power right now, like, the only functional restriction that he has is the squeamishness of the officials around him. Like, there's no check from the legislative branch because the Republicans in the Senate and on the Hill and in the House are not going to do shit. So there's no block there. Not an election year. They're not going to impeach him again. He has no block there. Literally the only thing between him, whatever he wants, is the willingness of those around him to carry out his orders. And last night was a display of how far they're already willing to go. And what if like he ordered them to start shooting protesters? If Millie agreed, what would happen? We're probably not there yet where that would be able to fly by, but we're not that far off.
I mean, they're shooting rubber bullets and tear gas, and that can also, I mean, cause serious damage. But
he has to escalate. I mean, still, he's still going up the ladder, but like he's already showing that the military is not going to be the one to call his bluff. They're going to go along with it.
Right. And there was some, like, a low-flying helicopter they brought in to,
they brought a Black Hawk in to fucking fly below the building line.
Was it Black Hawk? I heard that it was, like, some kind of medical
helicopter. I don't know any helicopters, whatever. I heard a Black Hawk. We could tell whatever it was. I wouldn't know.
But anyhow, yeah, that's, I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, all these tactics, they're just, all this state violence, it's just being turned against the American people. It has been projected outward for a long time, except for with Black communities here. And now we're just, I don't know. The whole thing's terrifying. It's been a tough week. All right. Anything else that we missed today? Oh, yeah. Do you want to just end with Trump's tweet today about what he's done for Black folks? Just going to go ahead and read that.
I haven't even seen it yet.
he tweeted this just as we began recording. He tweeted, remember how he always said, what have you got to lose? Well, this is what he said today. He actually pinned it. He pinned the tweet. It's that special. He goes, my administration has done more for the Black community than any president since Abraham Lincoln. Passed opportunity zones with Senator Tim Scott, guaranteed funding for HBCUs, school choice. Passed criminal justice reform, lowest Black unemployment, poverty, and crime rates in history. And the best is yet to come, in all caps.
That's not ominous at all.
It's going to be a long-ass year, man. All right. Okay. All right, Susan, I guess that's it for us.
All right. Stay safe out there.
Yep. All you guys stay safe. All right. See you in a week.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. And you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.
When I die, Google Drive will reveal all my secrets. There is so much shit in there.
I need like a self-destruct in my Gmail.
I know.
Dead man switch.
Although I figure it'd be kind of like a time capsule for my children who probably will not give, they won't give a shit enough to even look. But I have like lists of like ideas for things I want to write about.
And gift ideas. Mm-hmm. And-